Welcome to the Portland Christian Center podcast. This week, Pastor Ray Noah shares a message titled, Be the Blessing. You will also hear from three guests as they share about how they've seen God move in Africa. Now here's Pastor Ray.
I love the sound of that. I really do. I hate to cut it off, but it's my turn to talk, and I got a lot to say today. So I have some friends that have joined me on the stage, and they're going to come and share a part of this message with me this morning as they talk a little bit about a recent missions trip and the story of what God is doing. By the way, this is the last Sunday of the month, and by tradition, the last Sunday of the month, we receive a second offering. At the end of the service, you'll get the hang of it. And anyway, we're going to receive a second offering, a missions offering at the end of the service, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that. You know, last fall, I led the church through a message series on giving, a stewardship series, and it was called Overflow. And as you remember, if you were here, and I hope you were, we talked not so much about the law of tithing, but we talked about the law of abundance, the cycle of abundance that God wants to bless His people with, which I think, by the way, is a much more biblically centered way of talking about giving. You know, people get all nervous when the pastor starts talking about money, about their money especially. You know, the culture says, why does the church always ask about money, and they want money, and that's all they want, money, money, money. I think when you talk about really the bigger picture of this call to stewardship, when you talk about the cycle of abundance and the spirit of generosity, I think is a much more God-hearted way, biblically-centered way to approach this. And so we did that. And the bottom line, really, if you distilled everything that we talked about, the bottom line to what we talked about was this, that the more you give away, the more God will give you to give away so that you can give away more. You see that cycle? The more that you give to the work of God, the more generous you are, the more that God will make sure that you have that whatever, money, time, energy, resources, to give away. God will make sure that you have that so that you can give even more. That cycle of abundance is God's irrevocable law. And that really, when you think about it, that really is what biblical prosperity is. That is what biblical success is. That is what biblical, true biblical wealth is. That God gives me more so that I can give it away more. You know, people that think in terms of giving and God's abundance, in terms of what they can store, you know, stock up in their own lives and use on themselves, have missed the point. You know, there is some of that spillover, that overflow into our lives when we're generous, that we do have the blessings of God, but God wants to bless us so that we can be a blessing to an even greater degree. And when we come to understand that, when we come to understand that the best use of our lives and the best use of our church is to be that conduit of generosity. When we get that, then we will come into the sweet spot of God's generosity to us. And we will truly become blessable, that we will be more blessable. God can release more to us. Well, there's a corollary to that law of abundance that I want to share with you this morning. It's the circular law of abundance. It's what I would call the law of blessing, the circular law of blessing, and this is what it is. When you focus your life to be a blessing, when you align your life, when you determine to use your life to be a blessing, God makes sure that you will always be blessed so that you can continue to be a blessing. Very similar to the law of abundance, the circular law of abundance. When you determine, God, I'm going to use my life to be a conduit of blessing to others, God will make sure that you're always blessed so that you can have a reservoir of blessing to always give out to the people around you. And that ties in very closely to this series that we are now in on Abraham. Specifically, it ties into the foundational part of this Abraham story, which is what is called the Abrahamic Covenant, which is found in Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, the Abrahamic Covenants. Now, since Romans chapter 4, verse 11 says that the Old Testament character Abraham is the spiritual father of all New Testament believers, that means you. You're a New Testament believer, even though you're not living in the New Testament time. You are a New Testament believer. So therefore, Abraham, the Old Testament guy, is your spiritual father. And what that means is that whatever happened in Abraham's life, literally, God wants to do in your life spiritually. It pictures what God wants to do for believers, including the Abrahamic covenant. The Abrahamic covenant isn't just an Old Testament thing. It's a New Testament thing. It's wrapped into the covenant of grace through Jesus Christ, but it's still an active covenant. And that covenant that you find in Genesis 12, 1 through 3, really was a threefold contract that God made to our father Abraham. Father Abraham had many sons, and you are one of them, and so am I. So let's just praise the Lord, okay? Where was I? Oh, it was a threefold contract that God established with Abraham and therefore with you. And that threefold contract is this. One, God says to Abraham, I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great. In other words, God is saying to Abraham and to us, I will make you a success. I'll bless you. I'll bless you. And I'm going to make your name great. I'm going to give you success, as I define it. And then two, you will be a blessing. It's not just that he will bless us, but he will make us a blessing. And God promised that to Abraham, and God promises that to you and to me as well. And there is nothing more satisfying, friends, not on the face of the planet, not in the human experience, there is nothing more satisfying than knowing that God is using my life as a conduit that others might be blessed. Amazingly, completely satisfying. And then number three, that all of the peoples of the earth would be blessed through you. That's the Abrahamic covenant. That all the earth, all the peoples, all the nations of the earth would be blessed through Abraham and through us. And that is God's promise of significance. The fact that we can have a worldwide impact, how much more significant, which is the cry of every human heart, that my life would be significant. How much more significant can you get than that? That God is using my life and my church to impact, to bless the entire world. So this morning, a couple of things I want to do. Firstly, I want you to understand that as your pastor, that I am aligning my life personally, and I'm leveraging my spiritual influence, my spiritual leadership as the pastor of this church, that Abrahamic contract might be true of us as well. I want that to be true for you, for me, for us, that we would be blessed. That we would be a blessing. And that through us, all of the world would be blessed. That we would impact worldwide. That we as a church would literally change the world for the glory of God. So I want you to understand, that's a lot of what pushes me, motivates me, fuels my philosophy as of ministry, my energy, my scheduling, my preaching. Everything about me as a leader revolves around this Abrahamic contract of blessing and being a blessing. But secondly, I also want to show you how that is actually playing out in our church and through our church over the past couple of years as we've reached out to the unreached world. And particularly in this ministry that we formed that I think you've heard about in the past, but I haven't really told you much about it, and that is what we are calling the Petros Network. A couple of years ago, God had laid on my heart that I needed to, that we, I, as a pastor, needed to establish a separate church-planting nonprofit to engage, to be a conduit where other churches and other pastors and other denominations outside of PCC could get involved in what we were doing. And part of that came because people outside of our church were asking me about this. Other pastors heard what we were doing in our church planning. Other denominations were asking, hey, how are you guys doing this? Other people were saying, hey, we want to be a part of it. How can we do this? And I realized that for whatever reason, it's poor form for other pastors and other churches to give a church like ours their money, right? I don't know why, but churches just don't do that. So I thought we need to form a neutral nonprofit, a church planning nonprofit, that can be the conduit for that to happen. We can invite them in. We can use their resources and plant churches through us for them in these unreached parts of the world. And so we named it the Petros Network. Petros is Peter in the New Testament, and it's based out of that verse, Matthew chapter 16, verse 18, I will build my church. This is a church building, church planning organization. Network we chose very strategically because lots of different people, churches, pastors, and even denominations were going to come on board with this, and we would have to cooperate and network together to be able to pull off this worldwide impact that's a part of the Abrahamic covenant. That's why we formed, and that's what we do. We plant churches among the unreached. And we go in, and through the planting of the church and the saving of the lost, we encourage redemptive lift to happen. And that is the kingdom life begins to be lived through the Christians and begins to impact the entire community in which those churches have been planted. And God has, that's why we exist right there. We exist to be a conduit. Petros Network exists to be a conduit for a blessing for the completion of the Great Commission around the globe. And God has given us amazing success and satisfaction and world-impacting significance. In the years that we've been doing this, we have now planted over 950 churches, just in a few months, a few years, 950 churches among unreached villages in four countries. Now, I thought we were in three. And then I found out this last trip, no, you're in four. They jumped the border and they planted a church where I didn't know. So we've planted in Ethiopia, we planted in South Sudan, we planted in Uganda, and now we have a church planted in Kenya, for crying out loud. So 950 churches. And this year we will cross the 1,000 mark of churches planted through one church and through the Petros Network. But moreover, we have seen the ones that we count, the ones that we know that we can count, and we think this is a conservative estimate, we have seen in these months 150,000 sinners, lost people, become believers. We now have 150,000 disciples being made in these churches. Moreover, these churches that we're serving, these denominations that we're serving, are quickly becoming sustainable. That means they can stand up on their own. They won't need us forever. We can move on to other areas that God opens up. We did not want to come and to stay too long because I think that's been the weakness of modern missions. We come, it's nice being needed, and so we stay too long, and they stay dependent on us. And we said, we're not going to do that. We're watching before our eyes these indigenous churches, these indigenous denominations become sustainable. We're also seeing the reproduction of disciples, which is what the Great Commission is all about. We're to go into all the world and to do what? Make disciples. And by definition, a disciple is someone who is making disciples, who makes disciples. And we're seeing this incredible reproduction in this effort that God has assigned to us. We're also watching the collaboration of churches and denominations to pull this off, which again was a great value that we had. We believe that God was calling us to do this in partnership, in a network. And so we now have over 40 churches and denominations that have come together to do this. 40. Now, that's like herding cats to make that happen. But it's happening. The unity has been laborious, but it's been incredible. And we believe that is, if there's the chief reason God has blessed it, it's because of this. Because I read somewhere in the Bible that when God sees his kids playing nice together in the sandbox, he likes it. The Father says, I can bless that. I can bless that kind of unity. And he does. So incredible unity. And then the redemptive lift efforts that we've engaged in are absolutely transforming local cultures. Because those local villages, those cultures can now see this is what the kingdom life is all about. This is how the principles of the kingdom are lived out. Now, you have already heard all of this, but I want you to know today that it's not just about the 950 churches. It's not just about the 150,000 people. It's not just about this incredibly vast sea of nameless faces, which is easy to kind of go, wow, that's incredible, and get lost in that. This is also about going and finding, seeking, and serving the one. These 150,000 converts are 150,000 individuals who matter to Father God. They all have stories. They all have needs. They all have destinies. They all have families. They all have fears. They all have potential. And God cares about each one of them. And so we don't just do this in mass. We do this. We go because of the individual. Not just all the nations of the world would be blessed, but that you would be a blessing. And so I'm going to invite these three different people that are sitting on the stage to come in a moment, and they're going to share their story. And the story of this last trip to Africa, their story is important, I think, for this reason. It's about how one individual went to minister through this ministry, this opportunity that God has given us, and how they connected with individuals in a way that was absolutely transformative, not only for the individual they ministered to, but I think transformative for them as well. And moreover, in each of these stories, you are going to hear something about God using us to be a blessing. You're going to hear something about the divine appointments that God set up for this to happen. And I want you to understand that God is in the business of calendarizing divine appointments for you. On every one of your, every one of you has a calendar. And God has taken the liberty, because he's God, he's taken the liberty to put an appointment on that calendar for you that is a divine appointment. And if you will be open and sensitive and step out, no matter who you are, God will use you too to be a blessing. The Abrahamic covenant. God will use you to be a blessing. So one of the redemptive lift opportunities that we engaged in was what was called the TESFA project. TESFA in the Amharic language of Ethiopia means hope. And the TESFA project was started to minister and to bring hope to some of the poorest of the poor, the poorest of the widows and their children in Ethiopia where we were working. And so the churches of this town of Gojo, where we do all the training, selected, there are eight churches in that town, and they selected eight widows for us to start with. And then the government came along and said, hey, we like what you're doing. Can we give you some widows as well? And so they gave us four more. So we started with four widows. And the point of the Petras, the point of the TESFA project is to bring hope to these very poor, the poorest of the poor, the widows and their children. And we do that by this relief fund where we help them with food, with clothing, with health and medical care, housing, and most of them don't have housing, and so it's helping them to have a place to stay and to have their kids. We sponsor their children to school, and in that sponsorship would include clothing and medical care as well. We do life skills and job training with them. We also have a microgrant program that will help them to start a business so they too can be sustainable. They won't be dependent on people for the rest of their lives. And if they can't handle a business, if they don't have those leadership skills or not able to develop the skills, we will help them through the Petros funding to get a job, to be employable, to find meaningful work. And what is amazing about this is in the months that we've done this, we have watched an amazing, literal, physical transformation in the lives of these women, these widows, and their children. And one of those you're going to see a picture of. The before and the after picture is absolutely incredible, stunning. The transformation that's taken place. This woman has gone from hopelessness to hopefulness. In fact, all of these widows have gone from a sense of and a condition of hopelessness to now being joyful and productive and experiencing that same success and satisfaction and significance that God has called us as his children into. I want you to hear the story of one particular widow by the name of Ayelu. I'm going to invite Carrie Egger to come. And Carrie and her family have been to Africa several times, and they're doing some help with the sustainable farming in several different countries, and it's such a blessing to have them to be a part of our team. And Carrie's been involved with Linda in forming this TESFA project, and she has an incredible story of this personal encounter and interaction with this widow named Ayelu. Carrie.
I want to first say the widow's picture you saw on the screen, her name is Etsede. And when we first met her, she just wept and wept. And it's amazing to see her now 15 months later, and her tears of sorrow had been turned to joy. So the widow's pictures you see, we know their names, and it's because God knows their names. And I'm a testimony to his miraculous power and how he sees the widow and the orphan and the poor. Ayelu, we first visited her, our team, in November 2012, and we went to interview the 12 widows. by seeing where they lived and what their home was like, their family, their living situation. And we also would go in and pray for them and do their home visits. So Dave Martin and I set out to do this interview and home visit with a Yalu and with an interpreter and a pastor. When we got to her home, what we found is a very destitute widow in a very destitute situation. Her home was pitch black. She had no electricity, no light. She had no bathroom, no kitchen. She had dirt floors instead of concrete floors, no plumbing. We also discovered an amazing fact about her children. She had four children, and as Dave and I and our team moved in, and I sat on a little baby stool in the house because of lack of furniture and faced the one straw mattress in the house, I heard this scraping coming in over my shoulder, a loud scraping noise, but it was so dark in the home I couldn't see what it is. When that scraping noise got close where we could see, we realized it was the widow, her oldest daughter, the two of them dragging in two teenage girls on their back. They sat the teenage girls in front of us, and Ayelu explained that they were crippled at birth by a spinal defect. And their little feet were curved in, and they had pink plastic shoes, and they were at an odd angle. The girls were 13 and 15, respectively, at that time. So Dave and I, upon our departure, asked the widow what we might pray for her, and thinking it was going to be her home, health, or happiness, it was that her girls' feet would be healed, that God would heal their crippled feet. So Dave and I had a moment of panic, I'm not proud to say, and we prayed for this widow, and many have come behind us and prayed for this simple request of this widow that God would heal her feet, heal her children's feet. Spring 2013, the team returned to Gojo and to the widow's home, and what they first saw was that Petros Network had put a Yalu to work in the guest house, giving her meaningful work, because the Ethiopian leaders didn't think she could hold down a business. She wasn't capable. And Linda got to know her a little bit and started asking questions. And what she found out is that Ayelu used to be a good businesswoman, but she got sick and she lost everything. Even the home she was in that was more of a shack didn't belong to her, and she was afraid she was going to lose it, the shack. Ayelu's family had disowned her. They wouldn't help her because she would not renounce her faith. And this is what they said to her. "Why are you serving Jesus?" they asked her. "You've lost your husband. Your children are crippled. You are so poor. What good has serving Jesus been to you? If you denounce Jesus and let us take your children to the witch doctors for healing, we will help you. Otherwise, we will disown you." To that she countered, "I will never denounce Jesus." And thus she gave up the support and the help of her family. Now, during this visit, the team began to ask questions of why couldn't we sponsor her? Why can't we give her a loan to run a business? Is she really not capable of doing that? So Anthony and Linda did another home visit, and they visited the house next door, which belonged to a neighbor who allowed a Yalu to come in and cook in their kitchen because she had no kitchen. This house next door was beautiful with multiple rooms, electricity, plumbing, kitchen, bathroom, compared to Yalu's, which was a shack. So through a miraculous set of events, God allowed Petros Network, through generous donors, to buy the shack Yalu lived in for remodel. And I just have to say, the miracle that happened in that is that in the middle of the night, because the team was praying, God moved the heart of the owner's wife and said, if someone wants to help her, we have to sell this house to her at a price that's reasonable for Petros Network. So God moved her heart to provide this miracle. The team then went to tell Ayelu that this house was going to be hers and she wasn't going to be kicked out. And they also offered her a micro grant because she had a good business plan. So on that day, they gave her those two joyful sets of news that, of course, undid her. But what was happening behind the scenes that Petros didn't even know until it came to light was that the prophets of Gojo had prophesied over this widow, Ayelu. And they had prophesied over her 15 days previous to the team arriving. What they said to Iyelu was, God has not forgotten you. He has seen your faithfulness. He's preparing someone to favor you. They said, this blessing will take place in 2 weeks. Your tears of sorrow will be turned into shouts of joy, and you will never go back again to the state that you were in. And so, as you can imagine, day 14, because I think God waits till the end, of that, she was granted a roof over her head and the micro grant to provide a living for herself and her four children. October 2013, the Petros teams comes back to Gojo, and through the generous donations I mentioned earlier, they were able to work on her house, as you can see here in the slide. They raised the roof. They added more rooms. It has electricity. It has plumbing because it's on a water line, and it has a room for her to be able to sell clothing and some food items. She's going to resell those as her business. That's her microgrant loan. Last February, then, I was on the team that returned back to Gojo, back to Iyelu's home. Again, our team got to see her. She still was working in the guest house from morning till night. When my eyes were awake, I saw Iyelu working. And we got to go visit her house now. So we pulled up to her house, and I didn't even know where we were. I didn't recognize it at all. This is 15 months later. It was this beautiful, bright yellow. Like I said, the roof is taller. It's an L shape. It's bright blue inside, whereas pitch black before. The dirt floors have been turned to concrete so that the girls could move about without being dragged through the mud. There's a bathroom in the house for the girls to use. It was just amazing. It just looked totally different. But the greatest blessing of all is that, you know, I can't believe I get to stand before you today and say that I have seen the lame walk. So 15 months ago, when people began praying for this widow's heart, that her girls would walk, here we are now, and those two girls, they're not small girls, and they are standing on their own 2 feet. They're not running and skipping, but with the help of another or a stick, they can move by themselves, and as their mom says, they can get to the bathroom. Iyelu says, she praises God. She says, once I was weak, hopeless, depressed. I lost my husband 14 years ago to cancer, and I wondered how I would provide for my children and how I would carry them all these years. But God said to her, she had this promise, I will never leave you or forsake you. I am your father. I will wipe away your tears. I will raise up people who will raise you up. God has made me strong through you, she said, by the prayers of many, with no doctors, and we think no physical therapy. My girls are happy and walking and can get to the bathroom. Many will come to know the Lord for what he has done for me. And I want you to know today that if you feel hopeless, if you feel depressed, if you feel that God doesn't see you, if you are poor in spirit, in relationships, if you are poor in resources, that if you remain faithful, I promise you God is watching and he is orchestrating heaven and earth for divine appointments to move the world to provide for you. There is hope.
Thanks, Kara. The prophets in her church prophesied, in 14 days, your world will be transformed. On day 14, the news came that she would have a house and a job. Divine appointments happen. They really do. If you want to know more about the TESFA project, we have a table out in the foyer today, and you can discover how to be a part of this if you want, how to sponsor a widow, just how to help be a conduit of resourcing that we can continue to make a difference in the life and give hope to the poorest of the poor. And another divine appointment that took place I want you to hear about happened with one of the students that came on the trip with us, Christopher Ketzel. Christopher, come on up here. Christopher is 14 years old, and he went on this trip with his parents, Anthony and Sherry. And, you know, they did all kinds of different things. They helped teach. They worked with the, Sherry worked with the widows as well, and just were really, really busy helping us out, doing all the things in this kind of moving parts type of effort that took place. Well, Christopher came with them, and he had to miss school. Had to miss school for a couple of weeks. I know it was a disappointment, but in a way, it really was a disappointment because he was going to miss some very important things in his school during that two-week period, and he had to really think about that. And he wondered, should he really go? Just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so being myself, I'm really interested in the arts and music and acting. I love that kind of stuff. So a month before we were going to leave for Africa, I realized, wait, I'm going to miss Districts Require, and I'm also going to miss Solo Ensemble. Those are things I've been practicing hard for a couple months. I've been anticipating. I'm like, wait, I'm going to miss those because I'm going to be in Africa. So the day I kind of realized that, I kind of had a little fit, you know, being myself, had a fit, you know, whatever. But so I did the only thing I knew what to do, and that was pray. So went up to my room, just prayed for a long time, just kept asking God, like, why do you want me to go? I have nothing to give. What do I have to give? Because all these people are going to be teachers, they're going to be helpers with the widows, with the orphans. They're going to do, they have all these talents. What am I going to do? My talents don't have a special thing in this area. And he spoke to me and he said, read James 2. So I read James 2, and at the very end in James 2:26, it says, so the body without spirit is dead, so faith without deeds is dead. So it's like, okay, guess I'm going to Africa. So,
yeah. And so little did you know that God was way ahead of you on what he wanted you to do. And there was an incredible divine appointment that just really literally rocked our entire team, including pastors who were just going, oh my goodness, this is amazing what God has done. So we had just gotten through with the day when one evening we were kind of doing our debrief and we kind of split apart and went back to our rooms, and you were walking up the stairs and you encountered a white American, an American man who was coming down the stairs. Tell us about this.
So yeah, we had just finished our debriefing, just heading up the stairs. This guy in front of me is an older gentleman, and he kind of sneezes or coughs. I don't know what it really was, but he says, excuse me. And I was like, you're excused. And he's like, oh, I was hoping no one heard me. So I was like, yeah, I did. I was like, what brings you to Uganda? And he said, my family's really in a tough spot at the moment. And I was like, wow. He didn't explain to me then, but later did I learn that his family had gotten into a car accident. And so what had happened there, in these roads in Africa, there's no reflector lights on the cars, there's no lights that we have on the highways, there's nothing like that. So there was a semi-truck parked across this main road that there's only one way there, one way back. There's no way around it. So there's a semi-truck parked across, and Stuart, that's the man that I met on the stairs, his daughter and son-in-law and their family were in the vehicle that was going down probably 50, 60 kilometers an hour, and that's really fast. So the man who's driving saw this semi-truck at the very last second. He tried to swerve, and the way he swerved, and his wife got most of the impact on the side of the car, and she was pretty much trapped inside the vehicle. And their one-month-old child was in the back and did not survive. She died. So he explained to me that they got in a car accident and that he just said, pray for me. And I explained to him what I was doing in Africa and what I was doing in Uganda, that we were training pastors down the street. We had a convention. And he's like, yeah, that's amazing. Please pray for my family. So I just felt like called by the Lord, just pray for the man on the stairs. So I prayed for the man on this hotel stairway, not an altar like this, but just a stairway, people walking up and down. But
Well, it just so happened that Linda was walking by and she saw Christopher, this 14-year-old student, laying hands on an older American gentleman praying for him. And the next morning in our team devotions, as we were just kind of sharing things that happened, Linda said, "Christopher, I just want you to know how proud I am of you for seizing the initiative to minister to somebody, to minister to the one, and well, way to go." And Christopher started to tell the story of what had happened. It was a missionary family that had been in this car wreck, and the wife was severely injured in the hospital, and this baby had been killed in the wreck. And so as you're telling that story, one of the pastors who came with us from Colorado, who's helping us to plant churches in South Sudan, literally gasped. I mean, the whole group went, "What is wrong? Was he choking on something?" He just gasped out loud, and he goes, "I just opened up my email, and someone from my church, it was a college roommate of mine, emailed me and said, 'Hey, we have some friends who are missionaries in Uganda. They were in a car accident. The woman is in the hospital. The baby was killed. Could you, if you're in that city, could you go and pray for them in the hospital?'" And we went, "Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness, this is that city. We do know this situation. We have a connection with this grandfather who's come over to comfort the family. This is a divine moment." And Christopher, you said not only that, but there's the guy, there's his family right upstairs having breakfast.
Yeah, when I had explained the story and he gasped, I was like, "Well, he's sitting right up there with his family." So we just ended up going up talking to Stuart, and he told us all about it. They made a connection, him and the pastor. And so he told us where they were at. And apparently they were actually at a pediatric hospital. At a pediatric hospital. That's not a place for people like that. So about a month before their car wreck, that was in late January, this pediatric hospital sponsored by the United States, they just finished their adult wing. And God, somehow through his miraculous ways, just gave them the perfect timing for the hospital. And also, when the car wreck had happened, there was someone behind them who was an ex-police officer who had all the emergency numbers, because you can't call 911 when you're in Uganda. So he had all the emergency numbers. They got immediate response from there, got to the hospital. So God was just working everything for them.
So Christopher and Pastor Kirk and one of the church planters that had some ministry of healing, praying for the sick and healing, were able to go to this hospital to minister to this family, to lay hands on this woman who's all broken up and this family that's grieving. And Christopher, you wondered, why did God want you to go? God had set a divine appointment where he wanted to use you to remind this American family 8,000 miles away in the midst of unspeakable pain that God was there with them. That's a divine appointment that God takes the liberty to write into our calendars. And in hindsight, it makes sense. Would you say thank you to Christopher for sharing that? Incredible young man, 14 years old. He's confident. He's able to share. And I just have a feeling that God's going to use him to plant churches around the world as time goes along. So God's got your number, buddy. He really does. So, you know, Pastor Kirk, this pastor from Colorado, called us at the last minute. And he said, "Ray, we have this guy in our church that kind of wants to go, and I think I'm supposed to bring him, and I don't know what he could do. He's kind of rough around the edges, you know, but he's willing to go, and I think we're supposed to bring him. Would that be okay with you?" And we said, "Well, Kirk, we trust you, but he's your responsibility. You got to watch out for him." And so this guy by the name of Dwight came, and again, this incredible divine appointment that was set up.
We had such an incredible team go with us. In fact, I have a picture of some of our team members that you can see on the screen. And April 6th, we're going to allow everybody to share. And one of the things that we saw amongst this team is that without question, Satan is real. And without question, God is bigger. And I have come back with just this incredible asking God to help me to see where Jesus is at work, where he is at work, and also to see Satan's tools and the way that he is at work also. So just this fine-tuning of hyper-spirituality that I think this team has come back with just new eyes and new insight. Dwight came on the trip, and he was a bit rough. His senior pastor wasn't kidding. He was a little rough around the edges. And yet he didn't have a role or a place, but as I was reviewing pictures of this trip, he just stepped in anywhere. One of the things that you can see him doing here is we interview each and every one of the pastors one-on-one. And as he began to hear their stories, he was just kind of overtaken with how God just worked and just in miraculous ways, and how he seemed to show up in all these different situations, and how he moved in each and every one of their lives. And there was one day that I saw him walking out away from everyone, and he was kind of downcast, and he just seemed quiet and into himself. And I thought, I wonder if Dwight's okay. So I walked out to him, and I go, Dwight, how are you doing? Are you okay? And he said to me, he says, I don't know why I'm here. I don't know what I bring on this trip. And I said, well, tell me a little bit about who you are. And he began to share with me his story. And really, he had had a life of alcoholism. And his life, according to him, was a train wreck. And he, after listening to all his stories, he wondered, how can God use a train wreck for his glory? And I just said to Dwight, this is what I've seen again and again and again. Is we think we've chosen to come on this trip, but I'm here to tell you, God chooses you. And so if you have even a whispering in your heart to join us on one of the Portland Christian Center missions trips, I think that's God's whispering to you, and I would encourage you to step up to the plate. And I said to Dwight, God has chosen you, and I'm going to pray with you that you will be able to see that, and you will be able to know that before this trip is out. He began to share with me the details of his story, and it was really quite powerful, in many ways heartbreaking, but really powerful, how God had just been orchestrating all the events of his life and how truly special he was. In one of those drive-by conversations with my husband, I said, Ray, I've heard Dwight's testimony, and he is rough around the edges, but I think it might be a great testimony to use in out in one of the villages. I mean, you could set him up, give him a spot, and then, if he messes everything up, we can make sure that it goes right on the end. And I just happened to mention that, and nothing else was said until a few days later, Dwight said to me, Pastor Ray asked me to share my story in the village. And I went, wow, that Pastor Ray is really something, But I said, that is so great, Dwight. And he says, but he only gave me 10 minutes. And so we're kind of talking about, what do you share? What do you not share? How do you go through this whole process? And he was so scared, and he was so nervous. And we had an opportunity to go out to a village. We got the times messed up, and so we thought we were going to be out there at 6. We stood in our church at noon. They said, we think you're supposed to be there now. And so we went, oh, no, jumped into the vans and got there eventually at 3 o'clock. And we rode through this barren area. There was nothing out there. I don't know that I saw any electricity, to be honest. I didn't see water. I did see the yellow jugs. Very barren. And we drove out and we turned in, and underneath this tree was 200 plus people with this tarp. You can see holes in it flapping in the wind. And they were there waiting for us to show up. A church plant that had been launched just 8 months before in a community that never had heard about Jesus and who he was. So we drive up there, and the worship team does some songs, and Ray does some words, and he invites Dwight to come up to the podium area. And Dwight is there. He's got his notes all written out, and his hands were shaking a little bit, and he began to struggle and stutter through this message, how God had been at work in his life. And he went through his whole time, and then he sat down. And I remember as he began to share, I watched some of the other pastors around and go, oh, no, does Ray Noah know what he is doing? Because it was less than perfect, but it was perfect in every way. And so he sat down, and Ray began to share and talk about how breaking of strongholds, and if you've had a challenge with alcohol and you've had other strongholds in your life, God is here today, and he can meet your need. And he can deliver you because God is for you. And then he gave an altar response, and hands, a sea of hands across this little village just raised their hands. And off to the left-hand side happened to be our van driver, and he was weeping. And 4 days before, he had cried out to God, to something, to someone, he didn't know what, that his life was in shambles, and he'd been given an inheritance, and he had drunk it all away. And his family was ready to give up to him. His fiance was ready to walk away. And he had absolutely nowhere to turn. And then he sat there and heard Dwight's story. Whew. Talk about a God encounter. There was a moment that we kind of just stepped away and it broke apart and we were engaging with the children and the families and everything. And I turned and I looked. And there was Dwight standing over there. And Samuel was in his arms, his head on his shoulder, and he was weeping. God knew Dwight's story. He divinely appointed Dwight to be there, not in his perfection, but even in his ruggedness to be there. Samuel was set up to hear about a God who loves him, who can help him, who provides for him, who can break the bondage that was in his life. God was there, and he had orchestrated this incredible and this beautiful thing. We got close to back to our hotel, and I heard Dwight on his phone calling his wife, saying, "Babe, God used me. God used me. I wasn't perfect. My life's not perfect. God used me." And then he called his AA sponsor and told him the same thing. God took a broken man and a broken vessel and used it to change the life of a village and to change the life of our driver.
Another divine appointment. A recovering alcoholic led an alcoholic van driver that we had hired. I didn't know he was alcoholic when we hired him. Just note to self, check their record before you do that. And Samuel, you saw his picture. He's in the vest there in the middle of the group, and he's a believer now. He's connected with us on Facebook of all things, and you know God is really turning his life around. You know, one of the funnier moments, and we'll begin to wrap this up, happened in this particular village church. We always try to go out to the village churches just to see what this is what it's all about. This is the raw reality of the church planting ministry, and it is raw and it is reality. And so we're in this village, this dirty village in this church. And, you know, I had been there in one of these villages before, and I knew their tradition. Their tradition was to give gifts to the white people when they come. And on a previous trip, we'd been to an orphanage, and they brought out a basket of vegetables and fruits and a bowl of eggs. And you have to take it. And even though they're so poor, you don't want to. It would insult them not to take their gifts. And then they walked out in that previous trip. They walked out with live chickens. Not dead chickens, not packaged chickens, not frozen chickens, live chickens. And so we had to take them, and we rode in a van back to our place with live chickens flying around. In fact, one of our guys was mean enough to pick up a chicken, and he threw it right at my head. And I turned around. I was in the front of the van. I turned around just in time to see this chicken flying at me, and I ducked and it missed me. And yeah, I mean, friends don't do that to friends. Friends don't throw chickens at other friends' heads. Anyway, so I knew what was going to happen. And so I looked up, and here they come with the gifts. Not chickens. They walked out with a goat. They handed me the goat. And I'm thinking, yo, I own a goat now. And this is going to be interesting, getting him in the van back to the place. And then they walked up with a big thing of peanut butter, unrefined peanut butter, and I had that in my hands. And I had said to Linda, hey, I knew what was coming. I said, hey, I got this. I can handle this. And then I saw them coming out with a third gift, and it was the biggest, meanest, ugliest turkey, live turkey I had ever seen. And I thought, I want nothing to do with that. So I held on tight. My hands were full. And Linda's hands were empty, and I thought, perfect.
And at that precise moment, I knew I was caught because they were so excited. You can see their smiles. I mean, they gave us their very, very best, and my chivalrous husband did his best.
That's right.
You know, and then I'm like, here we go. And so what's a girl to do except say, I got this. I grabbed its legs, I grabbed its neck, and smiled for dear life.
What a wife. What a wife of noble character. She is a Proverbs 31 woman. She can bring home the turkey. Yes, indeed, she does. You know, I'm going to ask the ushers to get ready. We're going to receive an offering in a moment here. The pastors of this village church. Interesting, very interesting kind of God encounter moment. A year ago, they weren't even considering planting a church. And they were in the training when we launched our initial wave of church planters. And they heard the training, and God spoke to their hearts. And they said, we've got to go plant a church. We need to be a part of this. Highly educated, sharp couple, Evelyn and Sylvester. And so they asked Linda. They heard the interviewing going on. They asked Linda, could we go out as church planters? And Linda interviewed them, and she said, man, this is an incredible couple, sharp, and if they're willing to do it, we need to find a way to sponsor them. And so Linda came to me. We had no more money to do this. Linda came to me, and she said, Ray, I think we're supposed to send these people out, but we have no money. What if you and I sponsor them? And I went, oh, sure. You know, I mean, I like church planning. I'd give my last dollar to do this. And so I said, sure. So we sent them out. And they left their home, they left their business, and Evelyn became the church planner and evangelist, and Sylvester, who is a Bible teacher, has a degree in expertise or knowledge in theology, was to go help to administrate this church. And they left their home, took their four little kids, and they moved into a one-room shack that is just unbelievable. And they started this church. And as they went into this village, they had no success. People resisted them, weren't interested in them. And so this couple said, okay, let's start a school. And so they started a Christian school. And school began to grow, has over 200 kids now. And they said, we turn those kids into ambassadors to their parents. Parents begin to come to the church. The church now has over 200. The church, as Linda said, meets under a tree, under a tarp. It's all ripped up. It's pathetic. And the school that they put these kids in is so tiny that the rooms are just absolutely tiny. It's a shack, and they put 50, 60 kids in one little tiny room, and they're giving them a Christian education. And as I'm talking with this church, you know, God just wrecked my heart, dislocated my heart. And I know when that happens, and I'm just going, oh, no, here it comes. And when Linda knows this, she goes, oh, no, here it comes. And I broke my own rule in front of that church to Evelyn and Sylvester. I said, God just spoke to me to help you to build a church. Now, I am not a church builder. We don't build churches. We leave that to the local congregation. That's not our deal. We plan them. We train them. But God spoke to me, and before I knew what I was doing, I said, we're going to help you to build a church and a school. And so in this offering this morning, we are going to help them to build a church and a school. So I pulled them aside. We talked about it. I said, look, I'm not going to be your benefactor. This is going to be a partnership. And I need to know, what are you going to do? How is your church going to have skin in the game? And then I'll go back and I'll ask our people to be a part of this as well. And so they said, you know, we're going to try to find the land. We're going to pray for a real miracle, because land is not as cheap as you might think. And we can make brick. We're going to start to make the brick. We're going to fabricate the brick, bake the brick, in anticipation of this church being built. And so they went to visit an architect, and they got the drawings. You can see those, I think, next. And we can build in this village a 600-seat church and a school. Show the next slide as well, a school. On a piece of property over 3 acres for $25,000. It's a little bit different equation over there, isn't it? And in fact, a little bit of money has already come in, kind of a first fruits for this. And so this is what this offering is going to be about today. Now, the reason that I think God prompted me is that this is an unusual couple. They're unusually dedicated, they're unusually trained, and they're not just leaders, they're leaders of leaders. They're not just church planters. They are going to establish a sending church who will plant churches, that will plant churches, that will plant churches. And the Lord spoke to me in that moment, and I obeyed. And if God is prompting you today, I want to challenge you to obey. If God doesn't prompt you, I get this, and this is the rule that I operate by. If God doesn't stir your heart, that's fine. He's going to save you for the next time, and I'll come asking. So don't do it. Don't feel pressured. But if God is prompting your heart to invest in this community that's going to have a church, that's going to be a training center for kids, a medical center as well, is going to be a sending church, then you can help me to do this. And so that's what this offering is going to go for. If you can't give today and you want to do it next week, that's fine. Just however you want to do this. And this would be probably the biggest single missions offering we've ever done, to be able to do this. If God prompts your heart, then just let the Lord speak to you and do it. And God will provide that need. God will provide that need. Maybe this is that divine appointment and why, in part, you're here today. Now, just a couple of things as the ushers are going to come. This is about the Abrahamic covenant, that God will not only bless us, but he will make us a blessing. And so this is one of the ways that you can be a blessing by your financial gift. But there's another way, whether you give or not today, there's another way that you can be a blessing. We've talked about divine appointments. And my belief is that God has taken the liberty to get onto your calendar, and he has scheduled a divine appointment for you. It's waiting for you today. It's waiting for you this week. Whether you are a businesswoman, a wife, a mother like Carrie, whether you are a high school student like Christopher, whether you are a recovering alcoholic like Dwight, God has a divine appointment, and he wants to use you to be a blessing. And there's no satisfaction quite like that, of being used by God in those moments. So, be the blessing. That is the way of our Father Abraham. That is the way of our Father God. Be the blessing.
Thank you for listening to the Portland Christian Center podcast. For more information about the ministries of Portland Christian Center, please visit us online at pcctoday.com. Again, thank you for listening.